We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Diving deep into your Boston Red Sox, it's Red Sox Review with Brian Barrett, your exclusive home of the Sox, WEEI.
Allow me to reintroduce the 1-0. Myself.
Swing and a drive, deep left field, way back, we are tied! A massive home run for Arroyo. And for the second night in a row, he has knotted the ball game. It's 5-5.
Oh, that's a great call there from Will Fleming, of course, on the Red Sox Radio Network tonight. Great call by Will. And man, you could hear Fenway Park was electric after that home run from Arroyo. He has been clutch the past couple of games. Brian Barrett with you up until midnight. 617-779-7937 is your number. What was your biggest takeaway from this game? 617-779-7937 is the number. Because if you're like me, I'm not ordinarily pessimistic, but it was a 5-1 ball game. And you were thinking, all right, maybe the Red Sox have a chance in this one because it was 3-1 there in the top of the sixth inning. And Sawamura comes in, and Sawamura is somebody that they were wondering, is he going to need to go on the IL? Because remember, he's been dealing with a hip issue, and Sawamura is somebody that has been throwing the ball really well as of late. And then guess who comes to the plate? Vladimir Guerrero Jr. And I don't know what you do with this guy. I really don't. He is an absolute freak show. The only guy that got him tonight was Garrett Whitlock. Garrett Whitlock struck him out on three pitches, which is, I believe, quite frankly, that Garrett Whitlock could keep that ball, or should keep that ball, rather, because not many people are striking that guy out, because Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is an absolute stud. He's the MVP in the American League right now. I know you could throw out Otani, but I don't know how you don't give it to this guy right now. He hits everything. He does not strike out. He walks a ton. I don't know what you do with him, but he absolutely crushes a home run to make it 5-1. So right then and there, I'm thinking to myself watching this game, it's over. Red Sox aren't coming back in this game, especially considering the fact that Stripling threw the ball relatively well for the majority of the night. I thought it was over. I thought the Red Sox were losing this game. I'll admit it. It's a 5-1 ball game. Garrett Richards had a really rough outing, although I do give him credit for getting through 5 1/3. I don't know how the hell he did that, quite frankly. But after Sawamura gives that up, you're thinking to yourself, all right, how the hell are the Red Sox going to find a way to come back in this game? And I give them a ton of credit because you saw the grit there in the sixth inning from this team. Verdugo comes up to start off the sixth inning, doubles on a changeup, and Verdugo was the player of the game, obviously. Three hits in this one, had the walk-off hit as well. But the sixth inning is really what changed things for the Red Sox. And you also have to acknowledge, even if you're the biggest Red Sox fan in the world, that the Blue Jays did you a lot of favors in this game for you to be able to win it, right? So let's go through what happened there. Verdugo doubles on a changeup middle-middle, 100 miles an hour on the exit velocity. So you're thinking to yourself, all right, 5-1, maybe get a little bit of a rally going here, get yourself back in the game, right? So after that, JD flies out on a slider, fell behind 0-2, looking at a curveball and a slider in that at bat as well. But then he flew out on the slider after he looked at two strikes. And you're thinking to yourself, if they're going to come back in this game, you need something from JD or you need something from Devers, right? So JD flies out, in comes Devers. He grounds out on a curveball. It was not a good night for Devers. He was not good at the plate. He had that errant throw there in the ninth inning as well. Not a good night for Devers, but after Verdugo doubles, you're two big bats because, of course, Bogaerts is out of the lineup tonight. They scratched him. He's dealing with a little bit of a knee issue. Alex Cora said he hopes that he'll be available on Sunday. And you don't want to be pushing Bogaerts at this point in the season, right? You need him to last for the majority of the year. So if the 2 days off help him, I'm all for that because look at what happened to Verdugo. You give him 2 days off and he looks completely fresh and it looks like whatever was bothering him. He was dealing with back tightness at one point earlier this season. He had a hamstring issue. So if you need Bogarts to get off his feet for a couple of days, go ahead and do it if you're the Red Sox, because you want him healthy at the end of the season. But anyway, after those two guys go down, JD and Devers, you're thinking to yourself, all right, well, this is probably not in the cards for the Red Sox. And then Renfroe comes up. He hammers a single on a slider back up the middle, 106 miles an hour on the exit velocity. That brings in Verdugo to make it a 5-2 game. So you're thinking, all right, maybe a little bit of life here. You make it 5-2. And then Vasquez singles on a fastball the opposite way. And this is what I love about the approach of Vasquez, right? Because at that particular point in the game, it's the sixth inning. It's 5-2. Stripling's getting towards the end of his outing. Vasquez knows that. The Red Sox know that. But Vasquez doesn't try to do too much, right? He doesn't try to get too big with his swing. He goes the opposite way, which is what you want to do at that point in the game. Stripling is starting to fade. He's starting to struggle. Just keep the line moving. And that's exactly what Christian Vasquez did in that particular scenario. So then they decide to yank Stripling, and they bring in Chatwood. And oh boy, was it an adventure for Chatwood tonight. This guy sucks. So he came into the night with a 15.1% walk rate. That is horrible. Just to put that into context, that is in the 6th percentile in Major League Baseball. So you're bringing him into this situation, first and second, of course, with two outs. You bring in Chatwood, a guy that struggles to throw strikes. You bring him in with guys on base. And I understand that the Blue Jays are in a situation where it's a little bit too early to go to your high leverage guys, but I can't trust a guy that's got to fight 15.1% walk rate in that particular scenario. But anyway, what does he do? He hits Arroyo. Oh, boy. So he loads up the bases. And then Marwin Gonzalez comes up to the plate, right? I mean, if this is the Red Sox, I would have been so pissed off. Marwin on the season is hitting 192. He has a 278 on base percentage. Literally throws strikes, and in all likelihood, you're going to get him out. Now, I know he made a nice play in the field in this game as well, but if you're talking about at the plate, you got to go after him. And guess what? Chatwood couldn't throw strikes. He works a 3-0 count to Marwin, and then he takes ball four to Marwin Gonzalez. That makes it a 5-3 game. You're thinking to yourself, oh, man. Because now with the new rules, I mean, you could tell right away, Chatwood did not have it. He hits the first batter, and he walks a guy that's hitting below the Mendoza line. Ordinarily, what would have happened there in previous years in Major League Baseball, you say, okay, let's get this guy the hell out of the ball game, right? But you can't do it. He's got to face three batters. So then what happens? Well, first, he throws a wild pitch. Bobby Dalbec comes up. He throws a wild pitch, and you score a run in that particular scenario to make it 5-4 on the wild pitch. And then he hits Dalbec. So not only does he throw a wild pitch to bring in a run, then he hits Bobby Dalbec. So you have the bases loaded. You bring in Mazza, and he ends up getting Kike to ground out on a sinker. But nonetheless, the damage is done there, right? Because you make it a 5-4 ball game if you're the Red Sox after you score on the wild pitch. So right then and there, you're right back in the game. And credit the Blue Jays for just not throwing strikes whatsoever, for completely falling apart. And I give the Red Sox a ton of credit as well, because quite frankly, you got to give Hunter Renfroe a lot of the praise here, because he kept the inning going, as did Christian Vasquez. Because after Verdugo doubles and JD flies out and Devers grounds out, you needed Renfroe to extend the inning, and you needed Vasquez to extend the inning to expose the Blue Jays, right? Because ordinarily what they want to do there is they want to let Chatwood get, or excuse me, they want Stripling to get through that inning. But because of what Renfroe did and because of what Vasquez did, back-to-back hits, they forced Montoya's hands. He needed to go to the bullpen. He needed to go to a reliever, and unfortunately, he just picked the guy that walks everybody in the ballpark. And that allowed the Red Sox to expose the Blue Jays in that particular scenario. Okay, so then you go a little bit further on in the game, bottom of the seventh inning. They bring in Carl Edwards Jr., who's not able to or is able to get out of that inning. But then you go to the bottom of the eighth inning, and that's where Arroyo comes up massive again, where it's still a 5-4 game. He comes up. He absolutely hammers a fastball, 403 feet, 104 miles an hour in the exit velocity. He ties this game up at 5-5. He celebrates the home run like crazy. I mean, I'm really starting to like Christian Arroyo and like the approach that he has to the game. He has fun. He pimped that home run like crazy. He walked out really slowly, and then he just kind of threw the bat. I mean, that was absolutely awesome. And then I know he said after the game that he picked that up from a bunch of different people, that little dance thing he did at third base. That's exactly what Vladimir Guerrero Jr. did earlier in the game. So he was kind of mocking Vladimir Guerrero Jr., which I wouldn't advise. I'm not saying mocking, but he was mimicking it, right? I wouldn't advise doing that just because Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is arguably the best hitter in Major League Baseball right now, the way that guy's going. I mean, I really would consider just walking the guy. If there's no outs, or excuse me, if there's two outs and there's nobody on base, I would not pitch to this guy right now because I don't know how you get him out. He doesn't swing at anything out of the zone, and I can give you some of the advanced numbers on that later on, but he doesn't swing at anything out of the zone. Anything in the zone, he absolutely crushes. So I don't know how you get him out. I would be very cautious with Vladimir Guerrero Jr. going forward in the series because that guy is just hitting the crap out of the ball. But anyway, getting back to the original point, that makes it a 5-5 game. And then, of course, we know what happens in the ninth inning because you had a situation where Kike Hernandez puts the ball in play. Bichette, who is not a good fielder and not a disciplined hitter whatsoever. Quite frankly, I think that guy is completely overrated, but that's a story for another day. He throws the ball away. Kike advances to second, and then you pinch run with Santana, and then you bring up Verdugo, hits the ball off the wall, which credit Verdugo for being able to do that. And thank God that Dolis only had to face two batters in this game. Because remember him a couple of weeks ago? I mean, does anybody work slower, than that guy? It's unbelievable, especially when it's raining out. I mean, just throw the damn ball. Guy takes like 3 minutes in between pitches. So I'm glad that he only had to face two batters tonight, because if you had to go a couple more batters, you're looking at a 30, 35-minute inning the way that that guy works. But the other thing I want to mention real quickly here is the bullpen. I got to give the bullpen a ton of credit tonight because really they picked up Garrett Richards, who did not have his best stuff whatsoever. Now, I understand that Sal Amora gives up the home run to Vladimir Guerrero Jr. I'm not going to hold that against him. I mean, he absolutely crushed that thing, 111 miles an hour on the exit velocity, but it's one of the best hitters in the sport. I have not lost faith in Sal Amora at all. He'd been dealing with an injury, so I'm still high on Sal Amora. Now, Workman's in for the seventh. This is where I don't understand where Alex Cora is going with this one. I don't want to see any more Workman, quite frankly. I know that they brought him back for nothing. I understand all that, and look, great. They got Pivetta, and they got Seabold for him in that deal, which was great, but I don't know what value Workman provides to this team. He sucked in Chicago this year, 7 walks, 12 hits in 8 innings, 6 earned, and a 2.3 whip. It almost seems made up, right? Last year in Philly, he was horrible, 13 innings, 23 hits, 10 earned, 9 walks. He's just been really bad in terms of the past couple of years. Ever since the Red Sox traded him, this guy stinks. So I don't want to see him in a big game. It's a big game. It's a game in this situation where you're still trying to win. I get you're down at that particular point in time, but I don't want to see Workman in any situation where it's not like a 2-3 run difference because I don't trust him. I mean, you look at this, Grichuk singles. He had him down 0-2. Eventually, he threw him a horrible curveball, which he singled off the wall. And by the way, Grichuk is a guy that, if I know this, the Red Sox know this, he swings at 40% of pitches out of the zone. That's 134 out of 141 qualified candidates. Don't throw him a strike when you get him down 0-2, and unfortunately Workman does, and he's able to single there. He does get Tellez to strike out on swinging on a curveball down, but then Gurriel doubles on a fastball. And by the way, Gurriel is somebody that can't hit breaking balls. He's hitting 179 on plate appearances that end in breaking balls. Workman's best pitch is his curveball. He's throwing him fastballs. Gurriel's going to hit your fastball. It's just the reality of the situation. So I hated Workman in that particular scenario, but I got to give Taylor credit because Taylor comes into that game after you had two men on base, right? Eventually becomes second and third. Taylor comes into this one 16 straight scoreless outings. Make it 17 because he comes in, he strikes out Biggio swinging, and then he strikes out Adams, the pinch hitter, on a nasty slider. He's become a major weapon for this team as Josh Taylor. He now has a 32.9% whiff rate, which is in the 83rd percentile in baseball. It's because his slider is absolutely filthy. Think about that. That shows balls coming into this game. After Workman made a complete mess, made a complete disaster, Taylor comes into this game, gets back-to-back strikeouts to keep it manageable for the Red Sox, to keep them in this game. I mean, unbelievable performance by Josh Taylor tonight to pick up Brandon Workman and pick up his manager as well, because I don't want to see Workman in those situations anymore. And then Whitlock gives you 2 scoreless innings. He was really good in this game as well. And he got himself into a couple of jams, and he was able to pitch out of it. The highlight from Whitlock is he struck out Vladimir Guerrero Jr. on 3 pitches. Nobody strikes out Vladimir Guerrero Jr. on 3 pitches. He was able to do that. And even if you go to the ninth inning, Whitlock back on, he gets Hernandez to ground out to third, but a bad throw by Devers, so you put a man on base there. He then gets Grichuk to fly out to left, and Tellez singles up the middle on a changeup. Nice piece of hitting by Tellez, but you work yourself into a jam, first and third with one out, and Devers doesn't help with that. But then he gets Gurriel to look to swing at a slider. I don't know what the hell Gurriel was doing. This is another thing that you give the Blue Jays credit for. Gurriel's swinging at a ball way over his head. I don't know what the heck he's swinging at. But anyway, horrible pitch, but you get him to swing at it. He walks Biggio to load up the bases intentionally. He gets Adams in there, and Dahlbeck cannot make a play on a foul ball. And you're thinking, oh, geez, I mean, this is a bad situation for Whitlock. He gets the final out of the inning. Now he's going to do it again. What does he do? He gets Adams to ground into a fielder's choice. Nice play, by the way, by Marwin Gonzalez, who I know I got on him for his lack of ability to hit the baseball. But anyway, made a really nice play there. So Whitlock overcoming some adversity, the Devers era. And then, of course, Bobby Dahlbeck had a play that he should have made that he's unable to come up with. And Whitlock's able to bail him out. So a really nice night from Whitlock, being able to strike out Guerrero Jr. on three pitches and then getting out of that jam in the ninth inning as well. He was great. Josh Taylor was really impressive, and the lineup, give them all the credit in the world for fighting back in this one, because you did not get a good performance from your starting pitcher, and quite frankly, you had some issues defensively tonight as well. So a really nice win for the Red Sox to start this thing off. And if you're the Blue Jays, you got to be kicking yourself tonight. You had a golden opportunity to take game one of the series over a team in your division you're trying to make up ground on, and you just fell on your face. You had 11 hits in this game. You had 11 hits, I should say, off Garrett Richards. In the game, you had 16 total, and you lost. You only had 5 runs on 16 hits. Disaster for the Blue Jays tonight. You give the Red Sox credit, but the Blue Jays did everything you could possibly do to lose a baseball game tonight. Imagine if we were on the other side of this one as Red Sox fans tonight. How pissed off would you be if you were a fan of the Blue Jays? What a joke. 617-779-7937, the number. Let's start it off tonight with Wally. He's in Fall River. Wally, what's up?
What's up, Brian? Everybody's going home happy as a clam again.
Oh, what a win.
Very exciting, but you have to give the Red Sox a lot of credit. They get a lot of spunk.
Yep.
You know, they're playing better at home, and you know, Devers just cooled off a little. AJ just started, you know, starting to get back in the group. But you're getting help from the other guys. It's all the little things that count. Everybody's chipping in. You know, they might be hitting 290 or 190 or 200, but everybody seems to be chipping in now. So that's going to help a lot. But as far as Bo Bichette, thank you very much. You know, it was just that's what happens. Like you said, when you put the ball in play and don't strike out, good things can happen. But Alex Verdugo, once again, he's our spark plug. You know what? He's not going to hit 40 home runs or steal 50 bases, but he's just a good influence on this whole team.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that, Wally, and I appreciate the phone call as always. You can grab his line if you'd like. It's 617-779-7937. It's a good word for Verdugo, the spark plug. And you look at him just in terms of what he does. He's just so consistent. So in terms of his zone contact percentage, so when he sees a pitch in the zone, he makes contact 92.7% of the time. That's 10th in all of Major League Baseball. You throw him a pitch in the zone, he is going to make contact on it. By the way, he only strikes out 11.9% of the time. That's the best on the team. That's in the 95th percentile in all of Major League Baseball. He whiffs on just 14% of pitches he swings at. That's in the 95th percentile in Major League Baseball. This guy handles the bat as well as anybody on the team with the exception of Xander Bogaerts. Bogaerts is in a whole different category when you talk about what he's able to do in terms of being able to hit pitches out of the zone. But Verdugo is really disciplined at the plate. Has a really good approach. And I do also believe that when you play 162 games like you do in Major League Baseball, you need a guy like this on your team. Dustin Pedroia was like this way in a different way. And Jerry Remy has compared him to Dustin Pedroia in many different ways over the past year or so because of the energy he brings every night to the ball club. When you are grinding through a season, you need that type of energy. And Alex Verdugo certainly does provide it. But Bo Bichette, by the way, to Wally's point, that guy's completely overrated. He is not good in the field. He is not an everyday shortstop. I don't know why I understand it. He's a top prospect, or he was when they brought him up. But he chases way too many pitches out of the zone. And, I mean, if you look at it, you can get that guy out of the zone very easily. But for whatever reason, Garrett Richards didn't want to do that. But Bichette's somebody, he swings at pitches out of the zone 40% of the time. 40% of the time. He ranks 135th out of 141 qualified candidates. So forgive me for saying that Bo Bichette's one of the most overrated players in Major League Baseball. Sorry, he is. All right, 617-779-7937, the number. Brian Barrett with you up until midnight. You'll hear from the manager, Alex Cora, after this one. What did he make of this win, because what a wild one at Fenway for the second consecutive night. And I also want to get into Garrett Richards' outing, because one thing that is really troubling that's becoming a trend with Richards, we'll get into that in just a little bit here on WEI.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This is Red Sox Review on WEEI.
All right, welcome in. Another win for the Sox tonight. They improved to 39-25 to keep pace with the Rays. They're just a game back at Tampa. Tampa did win tonight. They beat the Orioles. That's why it's important for the Red Sox to keep winning and just knock the Blue Jays out of this division race. This is a good baseball team. They got a good lineup. The pitching staff is not great, with the exception of Ryu, really. But the Red Sox need to take at least three or four in the series, especially considering this one, it was gift-wrapped for you. It was. That's the reality. You did not get a good performance from your starting pitcher. Richards was not good. Richards, by the way, on the season, you realize he has an 8.25 ERA in the first inning. They got to figure that out. I don't know why this guy is not ready to pitch when the game gets started. Again, he gave up a run in the first inning tonight. Luckily, he's able to get out of that inning, only giving up a run. But then the second inning was a problem as well. So he gets Biggio to ground out, but then McGuire doubles on a fastball middle of the zone. It's the nine-hitter hitting 209. You can't throw it by him. You got to be able to get the nine-hitter out, right? I mean, this has become an epidemic lately with this team. But he gets Simeon to fly out, so you're thinking to yourself, all right, you have two outs. You got one man on base. Get out of this inning. Get this start back on track. You get Bichette down 0-2. Then he threw him three straight balls that, quite frankly, they just weren't competitive pitches, right? A curveball way outside that Vasquez had to, like, backhand stop. Then a fastball way too far in and a slider way down. So then he goes to a fastball middle portion of the plate, and Biggio crushes it, 100 miles an hour in the exit velocity, and makes it a 2-0 game. But this is what I was getting to with Bichette. Bichette wants to swing at pitches out of the zone. He swings at 40% of pitches out of the zone. If you just made a competitive pitch there, you would have sat him down, right? And it's not as if he's immune to strikeouts. This guy will strike out frequently. So that's the thing that aggravates you about Richards there. You got to know the personnel on the other side. Execute a decent pitch. You get yourself out of that inning because Bichette is going to offer. That's what he does. But the problem was his pitches just weren't competitive at all, that you couldn't get Bichette to chase out of all people. And then you walk Guerrero, which I don't have an issue with because it's Guerrero. But he missed badly on a curveball. Whatever, fine. You walk Guerrero. I'd pitch around that guy as well. But then Hernandez singles on a slider that, quite frankly, just didn't move. So that makes it a 3-0 game. You bring in another run there. And that's when the Red Sox had to find a way to fight back. And after two innings, he'd given up 9 hard-hit balls, which means on the exit velocity, over 95 miles an hour. So for whatever reason, Richards has got to figure out a way to be better at the start of games, because he gets better, as we saw tonight. He does get better as the start goes on. So this is a very bizarre stat. Richards' first time through the order, 301 opponent's batting average and a 927 OPS. So basically, if you put that into the proper context, everybody that hits against Garrett Richards first time through the order, they're basically Xander Bogarts. Okay, but then he's able to find it after that. He's one of the rare pitchers where the third time through the order, opponents are hitting just 207 with a 572 OPS. So he's great the third time through. It's really bizarre. It's usually the opposite scenario, but for whatever reason, Richards is better the third time through. He's just got to be more sharp at the beginning of games. And the other thing with the Red Sox in totality here is you need a long start from Pivetta tomorrow, because when you look at it, the Red Sox have not had a pitcher go at least 6 innings since Perez did a week ago Thursday, right? We're talking about that last game against the Astros to avoid the sweep last week. You haven't had a starter go 6 innings since then, and this bullpen is getting awfully taxed. You need a long start from Pavetta tomorrow. 617-779-7937, the number. Let's check in with Alex. He's in Connecticut. Alex, what's up, man?
Yeah, hey, Brian. How you doing?
Good.
I got to tell you, I started the night off with this game. I kept, you know, with this game, I got so aggravated, I just kept running to the fridge, stuffing my face, ready to, you know, pull my hair out of my head. And you know what? As the game went on, it just got better and better. And they are just such a bunch of fun guys to watch, except for working, because he's driving me crazy. But
Alex, I've had enough of Workman. I had enough of him his final year here. And I know he had good numbers his final year here, but I never trust him. He had one outlier season. He's always, and that was 19. He's always walking a tightrope. He walks too many guys. Tonight it felt like he had no idea what the opposition, he had no idea what the scouting report was. I don't know why he's throwing Gurriel fastballs when the guy can't hit curveballs. It just didn't make any sense. And the guy's just, he's not an effective pitcher anymore. I don't want him in a big situation like he was in tonight. I understand the bullpen spent, but he's not a useful player. That's just the reality of the situation. But to your point about this team, it kind of reminds me of, and I'm not guaranteeing a World Series, but they kind of remind me of 13, where they just constantly fight back every time.
Yeah, I gotta love that about them. What is so great about them is they really do mesh as a team. They are a team because one guy's down, there's somebody else is going to pick them up. They pick each other up constantly. And this, I'll tell you what, you know, I was brokenhearted when Mookie, you know, left, and I understood he had to leave, and I always wished him well. But you know, for Dugo, I mean, his jersey is making its way into my closet. Because this kid has really got it together.
Yeah.
I started, you know, I compared them at the, you know, this evening. And I'll tell you what, you know, Mookie was at the beginning of today, he was 255 with 6 and 22 and an 813 OPS. And Verdugo started the night at 285 with 8 and 26 and an 801 OPS.
Yeah.
Now.
And Mookie's not having a great season, Alex. He's been dealing with a little bit of a back issue. I'm not saying Verdugo's ever going to be Mookie, but if you consider what Bloom got in return, and Alex, appreciate the call as always, man, and glad you're enjoying your Sox this season. His line's open if you want to grab it at 617-779-7937, the number. When you consider the circumstances that were going on when the Mookie trade happened, Mookie Betts was going to free agency, which means that he was going to leave. You got to get something in return. You have an everyday player in Verdugo, a top 2 to 5 hitter in your order. Right now he's hitting second. I still think that ideally he should be the leadoff hitter of this team. But anyway, you have an everyday player still under, what, 4 more years of service time. So you have a favorable contract, if you will. And also, let's not dismiss the fact that they got Jeter Downs in that deal as well, that by most of the entities out there is ranked in the top 3 in the Red Sox farm system. So if you had to trade Mookie Betts, you got pretty good return for the player, right? And the reality was Mookie didn't want to be here anymore. As much as people want to complain, don't complain about the Red Sox ownership. They are in the top 5 in payroll basically every year in Major League Baseball. It has nothing to do with money. It has to do about being smart from a business perspective, right? You don't want your guy to just walk out the door, right? When guys get to free agency, look what happened with Gerrit Cole. He gets to free agency. When he gets to free agency, what does he do? He goes to the Yankees. This is how it happens in baseball. When guys get to free agency, Albert Pujols, after his prime years in St. Louis, he gets to free agency. What does he do? He leaves. Mookie Betts was going to leave. You had to salvage it, get something back for the player. Luckily, the Red Sox are able to do so. Let's get to Derek. He's in Billerica. Derek, what's up, man?
Hey, how are you, man?
Good.
You know, first of all, like, you know, I want to say, like, this has been a really entertaining team to watch this year.
It's fun, Derek, isn't it? And it's going to be an awesome summer. Like, okay, the Bruins are out. The Celtics are out. This is a very entertaining team to watch.
Yeah, yeah. And, like I'm excited about Arroyo. I'm excited about Hunter Renfroe. Like, you know, some of those assists that he's had from right field are just ridiculous.
Cannon.
My only real issue with this team, and, like, I honestly don't know how Richard survived tonight. He was, like, 68 pitches through 2 innings tonight with only three earned runs.
Derek, how did, like, he make it out of the first inning, only giving up one run? I don't know how he did that.
I don't know. Like, I think there was, like, a card trick involved or something. Honestly, my biggest problem with this pitching staff in general is they're just not pitching to contact. Like, there's too much. Like, it's like this, like, you know, Daisuke Matsuzaka nibbling virus has, like, infiltrated the entire, you know, bullpen staff. You know, like they're just, you know, just go after them. Like, you know, I just,
I'm
like,
with you, man. It gets annoying. I mean, you look at it, to your point, right now they're 21st in baseball in walk rate, right? So they're walking 9.3% of batters. That's 11th in the American League, 21st in baseball. And just to put that into the proper context, is about 3.63 walks per nine innings. It's not good enough. And if Richards is somebody that will walk the ballpark at times. Sometimes Perez will do it, although he's been better outside of his last start. Erod's been nibbling a lot lately. Pivetta just walks guys. He just kind of gets out of control at times. But that is the main issue with this team in terms of the pitching staff. There's too many walks.
I just feel like that, like they need to have like a come to Jesus with the pitching coach. And you know, just be like, guys, like pound the strike zone, okay? Pound the strike zone. Although, like when
well, look at Barnes, right, Derek? Look at the change.
They were missiles.
Yeah, but Derek, look. I mean, look at the change that Barnes has made, right? They told him, hey, if you get to start throwing fastballs, 92% of the time, you're going to get guys out. They gave him all these numbers about, hey, if you just start off and you get ahead of hitters, like, you're going to be way more effective. Look at Barnes. Ever since he started pounding the strike zone, he's now one of the best closers in the sport. Last year, he was decent, but now he's one of the best guys in the sport. He's going to get paid like crazy in free agency. It's because he's peppering the strike zone, and you have too many guys in this rotation that just don't do it right now. And look, Derek, I will say this. This rotation has overachieved up until this point in the season, but this past week has been kind of an eye-opening moment for these guys where they are actually pitching to the numbers that they've had in their career, and that is a little bit concerning just because you feel like, all right, maybe some of this is found money.
Yeah, no, I agree. But, you know, as I said, you know, it's been a fun team to watch, and as long as they can you know, keep their foot on the Yankees' throat and keep them out of the playoffs. Like, you know, that's
don't worry about that, like, Derek. The Red Sox don't have to do any of that. The Yankees suck. Hey, I appreciate the call, man. His line's open if you want to grab it at 617-779-7937. We saw the Yankees last week. Is anybody concerned about that team? I know they may make some kind of major deal at the deadline. That team just doesn't have it. They don't hit well. They don't pitch well, with the exception of Gerrit Cole. It's just not a good ball club right now. All right, 617-779-7937 is the number. When we come back, we'll get Alex Cora's reaction to the win tonight, plus a really important update for this Red Sox team going forward. We'll get into that next right here on WEEI.
Back to Red Sox Review on WEEI.
How impressed are you just by this team's ability, this offense, to just keep coming back, and it's 23 comeback wins. So
it's pretty solid. You know, they were able to control the at-bats. It didn't look pretty in the beginning, but we put some good swings. And it just, today felt, you know, from my end, kind of like 07 kind of thing when the big boys were here, you know. And this is their first, for some of these guys, this is the first thing we experienced. And the way the fans are behind us, you know, from the first pitch all the way to the end, they were loud, and that's what we were talking about, how, you know, like, take advantage of Fenway. And today was one of those days that, yeah, we were behind, but it never felt like it was out of hand. We were a few at-bats away from doing a few things. You know, Dalvik with a big swing, you know, Christian, Hunter put an amazing at-bat. And then we go the other way. You know, we did a lot of things, and then we worked the counts, we walked. But today, Fenway was electric. You know, it's another great Friday night of Fenway. It was fun. It was fun.
Alex, with the just the way Arroyo was able to put together that good at bat and sort of get into one for the second night in a row, how do you just describe that moment for you guys?
Yeah, I mean, in the first pitch, he jumped out there. I'm right next to Bobby. I say, just control your emotions, you know. Don't get caught up in the whole thing. And then he tracked a fastball back, and he put a great swing on it. And this place went nuts. But it's one of them. You still got to talk to him, because sometimes he gets caught in the moment, right? And he gets away from what he does. That's what happened. Remember, he had a great game against the Marlins, and then against the Astros, he's pulling off, you know. And if he stays within himself, he has a quick bat, you know, and he got power. So that was a great swing. I always feel like, you know, those players that get selected that early in the draft, they're good. You know, some of them, they panned out early, others late. And there's a reason he was selected so high in the draft, because he has talent. It's been an up-and-down career, but he found, you know, comfort last year here. He comes to spring training in great shape, and he's doing amazing things for us.
All right, that's the manager, Alex Cora, and a great point on Christian Arroyo. Brian Barrett with you up until midnight. I give Chaim Bloom a ton of credit. Now, obviously, Alex Cora deserves credit as a manager of the team. The player himself, Christian Arroyo, deserves credit. But remember, this is a big-time prospect coming up with the San Francisco Giants, and since then, he's just not able to figure it out. He goes to Cleveland, and he was just designated for assignment, and the Red Sox give them credit, their scouting department credit. They said, hey, it's worth taking a shot on this guy, and look what he's able to do for the Red Sox. I mean, right now, he's not even making $600,000. He's not arbitration eligible until next season. He may be the everyday second baseman for the remainder of the season. I just let him play second base, and it seems like that's what they're going to do internally with the Red Sox. But back-to-back nights, huge, huge hits for Christian Arroyo. The other guy I want to mention real quickly is Bobby Dalbec. I've told you multiple times, I don't believe there is a solution internally that's an upgrade over Bobby Dalbec at first base. Maybe the Red Sox address that at the deadline, but I like the progress. I know it's two games, but I like the progress he's made over the past couple of days. Not to say that it says he's completely turned a corner, but you heard he was working on the fastball machine yesterday prior to the game, and you love the attitude of the player. And tonight, that third inning, hammers a fastball, middle, 441 feet. 106 miles an hour on the exit velocity to give the Red Sox a little bit of life when they were down 3-0 in the ballgame. And if you look at what he did last night, he had 10 swings and he only whiffed at two of them. On the season, he's whiffing on 40% of pitches, right? Which is only in the second percentile in Major League Baseball, right? That's really bad. And last night, he's able to only whiff on 2 out of 10 pitches. We saw improvement again tonight. And the strikeouts are something that's going to be an issue with him throughout his career. He's just got to cut down a little bit. I mean, he's striking out 36% of the time. That also is in the second percentile. So he's got to be better with that. And we saw last night he has that nice double off the wall to make it a 12-8 game, basically put it out of reach for the Astros. And we saw a very similar thing tonight with that big home run to give this team a little bit of life. And having that jolt at the bottom of the lineup, huge for the Red Sox, right? Now, I want to get into one other thing before we leave for the night. And by the way, I don't know what it is about Bobby Dalbec. I like the personality of the player. I like the fact that he told Rob Bradford earlier this week that it felt like he was lifted up from I forget exactly the quote, but he was basically, it was like a spiritual awakening, the home run he hit against the Yankees or whatever it was, but emotionally it was really big for him. And you feel like the guy's building towards something. Remember, he's still a relatively young player. This is only his second year in Major League Baseball. And you've seen that he takes his craft seriously, working on the fastball machine, trying to get better. I want them to ride it out with Bobby Dalbec. And if he doesn't get better by the trading deadline, okay, then you go out and you make a move. You may make a move anyway, but I want to see Bobby Dalbec at an extended tryout, so to speak, where he's the everyday first baseman, just like I want Arroyo to be the everyday second baseman. I'm not the biggest Danny Santana guy. I'd like to see Dalbec at more opportunities at first base, because if he never gets to hit against righties, he's never going to get better against righties. He crushes lefties. We all know this, right? His average was like over 300 entering the week, but he needs to hit righties. Okay, now one other update that we need to give you is Chris Sale. So Chris Sale threw again on a mound today, this time like on the actual mound at Fenway, through a bullpen session. Here was Alex Cora on that.
Could you evaluate what you saw out of Chris Sale this afternoon?
Yeah, we need to try not to get too excited. You know, it was that good, and just the energy and the quality of the pitches, the tempo, he looked really good, really good. He said that that's the best he's felt throughout the process. You guys saw it, having his peers around him means a lot to him, and I think pitching on that mound means a lot. You know, it's something that, obviously, with the technology, it helps us with information, but being on a big league mound, being a big league player, that means a lot to him. You know, he doesn't take that for granted, and it was a really good one, a really good one.
I'm going to try to not get too excited. Pretty excited. Just every time I see Chris Sale on a mound, I get excited because you want to see this guy back in the rotation at some point, and it appears that's what the Red Sox are going to do. Alex Cora alluded to the fact that it doesn't feel like they would bring him out of the bullpen, right? And they did say that it still is basically a January bullpen session. So you're looking at end of July, August for Chris Sale. But even then, think about it. Chris Sale has been breaking down the last three seasons when he was healthy at the end of the season. Think about what a fresh Chris Sale could bring to this team in the month of September, and even more importantly, in the month of October. I can't wait to see that guy back on the mound. We're just getting little glimpses, but it's going to be nice. Thanks to Justin and Will for producing. I'll be back to you on Sunday, everybody. Have a great night. Be safe and be well.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.